Today on Talk About That, John takes on a phone scammer and sees his books go flying off the shelves and off of trucks. Meanwhile, I quit the piano and dropped John off in 1991 to do ministry without technology. Plus a conversation about guns in America, politics, and other non-controversial topics. Today's episode is not sponsored by Windows. Hey, look out!
Hello, folks. My name is Derek Greer, and I'm reaching out to fellow pastors and church leaders just like you to join me and other Christian leaders and organizations throughout the nation as we come together on June 8th and 9th for National Unity Weekend. Together, we will show the love of Jesus as we serve our communities on Saturday, June 8th, and then preach from a shared text on Sunday, June 9th. To register, go to unityweekend.com. That's unityweekend.com to join us as we unite the church and unite the nation.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Let's go.
What's up out there, listener? I'm John here with Johnny for another episode of Talk About That.
It's summertime and the living is easy.
It's getting hot outside, man. I mean, it happened fast. You know, we don't seem like we have a lot of springs and falls. Oh, we had a spring somewhat there.
Everybody says that, though.
But
we never even really got a spring.
And then the cold weather cities, like it snowed a couple weeks ago in Colorado, I think.
Did it?
Brutal.
We'd have to ask our Colorado listeners.
I think it did. I'm pretty sure it did.
There's no way to know.
If only there was a device in front of either of us that we could. That's the thing about our thing is because we try to keep the conversation moving. So there's if we had a third person. They could stop and they could be doing that while we.
You know what, listener? You could be that third person for the low price.
If we did this live, it was a live stream every week, then yeah. Somebody could just start in the comments. We could have like comments. I don't know if I could handle that, though. The constant feedback that you get. I already have that in my regular job where you're like getting constant feedback from the audience. Like, nope, didn't like it. Like basically a no laugh is you have failed.
I just call that being a dad. Just constant feedback.
That's true.
You're just like, oh man.
Man, that is.
Hey, good, I love you. Love you, Sade.
You're a good dad though. It's okay.
I love my kid at all ages, but 13, she is very witty.
Yeah.
And she's really like her timing, mm-hmm. understanding some things, you know, has really caught up. And it is just a lot of fun.
That would be a big deal to me once my kid could understand jokes.
Oh, yeah.
And understand why they're funny.
Yeah.
Not even if they could make jokes themselves, just understand why I'm so funny.
This is all about.
I don't want them to try to outdo me.
No.
I'm not ready to be replaced.
No.
That's the thing about having kids. These people are here to replace you.
Oh, yeah.
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 They're coming for you.
Yeah, I have an only, so everything that I own mm-hmm. will be hers someday and her husband's.
And it'll be obsolete.
Always.
Most of it.
Well, I just mean
even like the furniture, like, I don't want this. Our first furniture that we got when we just got married, my dad had just passed, and so we had nothing. And so we have this old dresser, we got this old bed frame, we got this old whatever. It was all my dad's, and it's just, not only is it spooky,
right.
/ haunted, but it's old people furniture.
Yeah.
It's this old mahogany, curved wood, brass. It's
probably super expensive in its day.
Exactly, and it probably could have, but it's like you just feel like we have old people furniture
because
we're broke. That's the thing is like everything you think you're passing down, she's not going to want it, John.
She could sell the house and.
Oh, no, there is that.
Yeah.
Like assets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the land.
I just thought you meant like your phone. You know, like, I don't want this. iPhone 11? Get out of here. I'm on the 15.
Yeah, her phone's already nicer than mine.
Oh, that's
I have good. An SE.
Okay.
And it is officially garbage.
I don't know. I like the SE.
I like it, but my battery runs down before I wake up.
I think that's about you.
You know what?
I think your usage.
I think you're just being mean. at this point. There is a – no, I shut things down. I will say since I've been more active on socials, that does seem to run the old battery down.
Do you get the little notification that you have your screen time?
Yeah.
Is that a moment where you just go, do you justify? Do you go, but I have to be on this five hours a day?
I'm building platform.
This is how I give to people.
Well, you know, at lunch today I told you I would get off of social media right now.
Yeah.
And I would be happy.
And I pushed back.
Yeah, you were like, no, you wouldn't. Of course, then you went in away from social media into like just technology in general.
I went into the idea that
you would need to email people. Could you imagine how miserable you'd
no,
be?
No, not even email. Like, let's say I said, I dropped you into 1991 and said, now do ministry.
Some of us never left 1991.
That's true. I've seen you dress. But let's say I just dropped you there and said, let's go do ministry, you'd be like, I'm fired up. But you still know everything that you know now.
I say, come on, gang.
So you know the potential. Right? What are we doing, gang? And you work with gang ministries. That's not right. You go into prisons and talk about doing life together. That's no good. But you immediately would have like a phone list. There'd be permission slips you'd have to have faxed over.
Oh.
Like, you'd be so frustrated that you couldn't just hit one button and email all these parents and people.
You know, my book
If you didn't know better, that you'd be fine. But I'm saying once you know, you'd be like, guys, you don't know the pitfalls that you would be getting into if we had social media. They'd be like, you mean there's all the information in the world can be in your pocket and you didn't want that? No, I came back to 91 to do ministry with you. They'd be so frustrated with you and you'd be frustrated with them.
I don't know. You know, in my book, Letters to the Other John.
Yeah.
Not available.
Out of print.
Not available anywhere.
That's an OOP.
We threw away 2,000 copies of that. We threw away into the dumpster after about 10 years. But
it's like the Atari game. Did we ever make that comparison?
It is a lot like the Atari
game. You've seen that documentary? It's unbelievable. So Atari made an E.T. video game. And it took them they had 5 weeks to get it out before the Christmas rush.
Yeah.
And it's a garbage game. It's completely ridiculous. Graphics are terrible. Tasks are terrible. It's dumb.
Yeah.
And it was such a flop that they tried to just make it like it didn't happen. So they just Men in Blacked everybody and they buried it in the desert.
Oh, like, wow.
It's literally, there's a documentary where they got this guy, hears the rumor of this for years, and he goes and finds, he tracks down all the executives and he finds this landfill and he digs it up. And he, by the end, the last shots of him unearthing thousands of Atari video games. They're there. So yeah, so that's letters it. They're somewhere.
They're out there. Yeah.
I wonder if they're all together.
I don't know.
Just randomly like, this guy must have really hated this book. This is the 500th copy I've seen of this. How bad could this book have been?
Did I ever tell you the time that I was leaving? So Thomas Nelson is in Nashville, okay?
Yeah. Not the person. This is a
No, a guy
publisher.
Named Thomas. A publisher. Thomas Nelson Publishers. And what was great was before they, not that I don't like that they're bought by HarperCollins, so I love HarperCollins.
Again, not a person.
Not a person. But when HarperCollins bought them, they shut down the warehouse here and moved it like up north. And so since I'm in Nashville, when I needed to get first copy of our Reggie books, I'd go pick up a whole pallet because if you buy them by the thousand, then they're a lot cheaper.
Get that price break.
Yeah.
You're like, how many do I got to buy until they're free? Yeah. That's what I always ask. If they go, hey, if you buy 1,000, you get 50 cents off. How many do I got to buy until they're free?
That's good. Okay. And so one time I used to do it all the time, pull up my truck, get a big pallet. You probably helped me before.
Oh, yeah.
And
that sounds like something I would do.
Yeah. And at some point, one time I looked out the back on I-40 heading east and I see papers flying out of the back of my truck. And I don't know how, but one of the boxes or something was open. And we
just
lost
sending
30 or 40 copies, you know?
Your wisdom, like dandelion spores going into the atmosphere.
It was like all over the interstate. I stopped and picked up what I could, but I thought, you know what? I wonder if there's someone out there, Johnny, they're going to be walking down
trash,
this way.
A prisoner.
And they're going to be like, wow, this book about this guy named Reggie.
Yeah.
And that guy's never called or anything.
No.
So I don't know if my number was.
He doesn't know. It's better to just think that he's out there.
Yeah.
You don't want to put a name and a face to it.
I can see it right now. The phone rings one day and the guy's like, excuse me, sir, are you John Driver? I was like, well, yes, I am. And he'd be like, did you collaborate on a book called Reggie?
And I did. You think you're getting ready to get all this accolades?
Yeah. And he'd be like, I'm with the Davidson County Sheriff's Department. We've
got a citation for you.
We have a citation for littering. Yeah. Do you ever get numbers from like your phone rings? When I was younger, my phone would ring. I had a bunch of like proposals out and a New York number would call.
Oh, yeah.
Or a California number, uh-huh. We call LA.
Yeah.
And you're like, ooh, and you always
think
assume
it's a big deal.
And it is never
no,
one
it's a
time.
Telemarketer.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you know, are you interested
would
in
would you need a back brace?
Yeah. So
your extended warranty. Yeah, it's always something like that. But yeah, man, it's out there. Your wisdom is out there, and people have found – that is interesting, though, that somebody might have like found like dozens of copies of it.
Yeah.
And just be like, why would someone throw out 12 of books?
Really hated this guy.
Talk about that – a name like Tom Snelson is the name of in the HarperCollins. It reminds me of a time – like sometimes I'm a sarcastic person, but it's always in good fun.
Yeah, sure you are.
But every now and again, like I remember a moment, like sometimes I'm sarcastic with my brother and I go too far. I remember when we were doing campus ministry together, on UT Knoxville campus, University of Tennessee, Knoxville, we're like doing campus ministry and he was coming to one of the events.
Yeah.
And we lived in Fountain City, which was far away from downtown. We didn't go to UT campus all the time because we weren't college kids,
right.
If you know what I mean. So I was like, hey, you go down Neyland and you turn up Pathead Summit. He goes, is that the name of the street? I go, no, Pathead Summit's standing there. Just take a left.
She never leaves the corner.
It was like a B. Arthur from Golden Girls moment. No, Rose. I was just so hateful. So I just want to say now, B.
Did he still come?
He came anyway.
He showed up.
Yeah, I apologize.
He was the better
brother. That was probably too far. It was just, he set me up. He teed me up.
Yeah.
Is that the name of the street?
I do that to Laura sometimes.
No, Peyton Manning is out there. Don't turn on Peyton Manning Boulevard. Peyton Manning. We have hired him.
Turn on Peyton Manning.
Yeah, it was really hateful.
Run him over.
I can be hateful sometimes.
No offense to Peyton Manning.
No.
Yeah.
He's really falling on hard times. He's just waving people on. He's a crossing guard now. Come on, you. No. You.
One way. He's like calling out signals, you know, Omaha.
That'd
like,
be great.
You know, yeah, he's directing traffic.
There should be an Omaha drive on UT campus just because of the how famous that got.
Talk about a guy who has – his trajectory has possibly gone up since he left being a Hall of Fame
still doing commercials. That's the thing about Brady, too. Like, Brady came back and, like, I think – did you see his deal that Fox has offered him or CBS or whatever? It's going to be like – almost $40 million a year to be a broadcaster. He has no broadcasting experience.
Yeah.
Zero. I think it's because those documentaries came out, The Man in the Arena, and they see like how good he is at telling his own story and telling. Yeah. Like he really is. Like it humanizes him in a way that I was not expecting.
No, because he's one of those players you love to hate.
Yeah.
When you're a Titans fan, at least.
Yeah, or a Titans fan, or any if you're a Colts fan, especially. Yeah. But like that thing of... you see, oh, there's a humanity to him, and he's a family man. And, oh, I didn't know. Like, I had no idea about the Atlanta Super Bowl that his mom was there, and she was, like, basically stage 4 breast cancer.
Yeah.
And, you know, then they start losing the game the way they were, with 28-3 or whatever. And then he came back, and she was in the stands. Like, that was, like, huge. I was like, oh, my gosh, what a moment this must have been for his family. And then she recovered.
Yeah.
You know, she beat it. So I just – that was cool. But I think they see that, and they go, oh, Tom can tell a story.
He'll be
and of course, Romo set the template because Romo steps in, and everybody was mad that they got rid of Phil Simms on those Jim Nance broadcasts. They were like, "You're bringing in Romo just because he's Romo, and then Romo's the best that's
the
ever
best.
Done it."
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
And so immediately, so they're like, "Yeah, let's give this Brady kid a chance." But $40 million? I mean, I would have done it for half that.
I'm gonna say, listen, that's nothing for Brady. Come on, bro.
That's true. He's got that much in his couch cushions. Is that what you're gonna say?
Man. Come on. When you get into those millions, Johnny, I can tell you it changes you. I remember when it changed me, and it was like, this feels different.
Yeah.
You know?
But it feels good.
I shed a tear, and then I wiped it with a $50 bill. And,
I've been thinking, I have, like, I realize now, I have a lot of, like, I don't think of myself as well off, but I do have, like, some purchases that I want to make that are completely stupid. Like, I want a hot tub now. Mm. But I justified, I'm like, yeah, but I'm not going to be, like, a hot tub person. I just want it to, like, after a workout, I want to be able to, like...
Right, for my
muscles. You get in a hot tub and you, whatever. It's like, it's therapeutic.
Longevity.
It's therapeutic and whatever. It's like, but that just, like, if I thought about a person who would just go buy a hot tub, I would think, that person ain't got no kids, first of all, which I don't.
I was going to say, that's.
Like, that's not a thing you would
spend whatever you want, bro. You don't have kids.
Right. Yeah.
Like, the joke's on us. Yeah. You get to spend your money whatever you want.
Well, but you've got a pool. But you're like, yeah, but the pool was already there. But yeah, but that's one of the reasons you bought that house.
Mm.
How did I make it about you?
I don't know. And I was giving you permission to do whatever you wanted to do.
So you were talking about Sadie and development, and I listened to this podcast I started listening to this podcast called Smartless, which is one of the number one podcasts.
Yeah.
They're not a sponsor, and frankly, they're a competitor because they're way better than us. It's Will Arnett and Jason Bateman and Sean Hayes. And they've been friends for like 30 years. I didn't know this. So they're really funny together. But then they interview people, and they were interviewing Mitch Hurwitz, who was the showrunner and creator and writer on Arrested Development. Brilliant guy, and he knows all about interlacing stories. And so they're talking about he has two kids, and they're like, so now you have two kids. Tell me about that. Is they're old enough now to where are you starting to see your own traits in them? Are you seeing this one's kind of smart, this one's kind of funny, this one has a flair for joke writing, whatever, or they at least understand? He was like, well, I try not to push them that way. And he's talked about a study that he read. I was so fascinated by it. He's a really bright guy. But he said there was a study done, some university did it years ago. And it was like they took a group of first graders and they gave them a test, like a math test for first graders. And then they all got their scores. And then no matter what the score was, they took one group of them and said to them, half of them, and said, you are so smart to get this. Like, you're so smart. And they bragged on them. And the other group, they said, you're a really hard worker. Like, you didn't quit. I thought that was great. And then they gave that same group of people, those same kids, a test for fifth graders. And the ones who were told they were smart, 100% of them quit in the middle of the test. Like, they got to a point where they're like, I can't do this. And then the ones who said that they were told they were hardworking, they pushed through. And some of them even, like, got right answers, or they got something out of the experience. And so he was like, I learned from that. Like, I don't tell my kids they're smart. I think it's one of the worst things you can say to a kid. It gives them, like, something to lose. He said, once I read that study, it made sense. And then he gave this – I was, like, driving. I was on a long car trip this weekend. So I'm listening to it, and I was like – and I was immediately relating to it because I was like, this is me. I was like a prodigy kind of a kid.
Yeah.
And I was always told that I was smarter and I was an old soul. But it gave me this chip on my shoulder of, like, I can't lose this specialness about myself.
Yeah,
so I would not expose myself to failure because I was afraid to lose that specialness that I'd been told I had.
Yeah.
So, and then he gives this example. He goes, let's say you're a piano, you know, you can hear notes on the piano, and then somebody puts you in lessons. Well, you don't immediately get good at the piano. Nobody does. You have to practice, and you have to learn, you know, chords, and you have to learn structures and music theory to get good. And if they put you in that stuff, and then you've been told that you're a prodigy, and now you're faced with and I almost started crying. It literally was my experience. I was that kid. I could hear songs. We were going to church, these gospel church, full gospel churches, and I was hearing these early integrity songs or whatever, and I was like hearing them and I was banging them out on the piano, just note by note. And my mom was like, completely obsessed with me being like the next whatever.
Yeah.
And so she put me in piano lessons when I was in third grade. It was part of our school music program. She's like, you take piano lessons, you're going to be off to the races. And I took two lessons, and they started showing me practices and chords and do this. And this is where your mistakes are. This is what you're lacking. And when I found out what I was lacking, it was devastating to me.
Yeah.
Because I had only been given positive affirmation.
Yeah.
And so I'm not a parent, but it made sense to me as someone who grew up with like good parents. My mom was a good parent, and she still managed to probably get that part wrong. She could have just said, I really like how you push through, or like you worked it out. Like you work hard. Like, I think that's a better thing to say than like, you're smarter than anyone. Like now you've given that kid like this.
Yeah.
Well, I'll lose my mom's respect if I fail. So I'll just not try.
Yeah,
it's weird, right? Does it make sense to you?
Oh yeah, no, it makes sense both as a child.
I know we call our kids smart. We do. I'm not saying you're abusing your kid to call them smart. I'm just saying like there are better things possibly to say than that.
We try, you know, Sadie has musical talent that was very evident early, still very evident.
Yeah,
and I've never pushed her. Part of that was you know, you and I used to do School of Rock and some other things for a lot of kids, and I knew from parents and kids and youth ministry for years and years that if you want to get them to quit, push them and make them do it on art.
Make it a job.
Right. If you make them do art, the flip side is that if you don't push them, there's a good chance they'll never do it anyway.
Yeah.
But I want them to enjoy it.
You
or
give
not.
Them like an avenue to do it and make it fun. You know, like my buddy Ed Wiley, his daughter, he's a comedian, and his daughters, some of them are really gifted and they're singers or whatever. And he does comedy, obviously. And so he started bringing them on stage with him to do like his closing number, and they would sing with him. And it's so adorable and charming, and they're really talented too. And but now his one of his middle children started an open mic at this little cafe downtown, and it's her thing. Like, she's doing it. And now they he goes down and he does jokes, and somebody, and then some neighborhood kid will come in and do their thing. So it's like, that's the right tone, probably.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, as a dad, I certainly have told my kids she's smart, maybe because that's true. And I do understand, I was told I was special, you know. And I think that's it's
you know, like, and it never went away.
I still I will say that I have this sense of, and you get back to that whole I'm reading a book on the gift of disillusionment, and it talks about how the very word disillusionment, dis, you know, basically the opposite of, or the removal of, the illusion.
Yeah.
Like, you come to a place where your expectations cannot be met. Your expectations are met with reality, which leads to disillusionment. And that's actually really good, because you're actually in reality to some extent.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And, like, there's that moment of...
You took the illusion away.
Yeah. Because we live in that illusion. Some of that is the glimmer of childhood hope. You don't want to take all that away. You need to feel that there's, you know, so much possibility ahead.
Yeah. That's true. You don't want to just tell the kid all the time, like, no, you're pretty average.
Right.
Like, I get that.
Or like, you know, life's going to be hard. You shouldn't expect much.
We know that parents project their own insecurities onto their children, though. It's happened. It's time immemorial. It does that. Like, we tell them, you're going to be whatever that I couldn't be, or you're going to be as good as your dad was at this because I was good at this. Like, we can't stop doing that. It's hard to stop doing that.
Sadie will ask me, she's old enough now. She asked me this week, and it was something akin to, would you really tell me if I wasn't, kind of thing. This
right.
is basically one of those, this is what my parents have to say to me.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I wouldn't tell you that you're unusually gifted at this.
Yeah.
Like, if you weren't, I would just say, hey, you're doing great, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So no, I wouldn't pour on like this, because I do tell, you know, none of us walk up to a kid and go, hey, look, you really need to, you know,
your kid is dumb as a bag of hammers.
Right? I mean,
work on it.
But
please.
I, you know, so there's that weird thing with the hard work coming as now the reward for thinking that. I completely buy into that. Like, that's where I see kids that go, it's just not worth it to me. Now, whether it, for each
that's
one,
like, you're giving them a risk. You're giving them, you're introducing risk way too young of, like, you want them to take, I don't want them to take chances by jumping off the roof with an umbrella thinking they can fly, but you want them to be, like, creatively free.
Yeah.
And not think, oh, my dad said that I was this, and that means that I can lose this.
See, that's a very, by the way, Enneagram 4 thing you're saying right now. That
yeah.
You have that there's something special about you that has to be guarded, or has to be,
or you're just afraid that it's,
your life.
Or you're afraid that it's not true, and
yeah.
you don't want to ever find out that it's not true, so you don't take the chances. You know,
man, there is my dad put so much positivity into me, and for a long time it worked.
Yeah,
you know. You can do anything you want to do.
Yeah.
Like, you can do whatever you want to do. And so every election I ran for, I won.
Mm-hmm.
And every, you know.
You're like Forrest Gump. You just stumble into stuff.
I did. I was just like, oh. And I worked hard. Dad gave me the gift of work.
Yeah.
Working for my dad's lawn care business, you know, having to sweat yourself through 12 hours while you're very, you're sunburned and hurting and, you know.
Yeah.
Accomplishing that sort of euphoric end of the day, like, oh, I didn't like doing that, but I love the way it feels having done that.
Yeah,
that's probably what still drives me in a lot of what I do. So I don't worry as much about what I'm experiencing in the work, because I know,
but that's the same thing.
The
it's
good,
like,
feeling is coming,
right,
of having had done it.
But that's what I mean. That's what a lot of your parents saw in you too, probably, was like, and they're encouraging that spirit, like, John, you're a hard worker, you push through, you whatever. It's not just a matter of like, John, you could do this, because it comes easy to you. It's like, no, you did both.
I think
you were
gifted. I got both.
You were probably gifted intellectually, and also you were able to work hard.
I don't think I was that gifted intellectually. I look back now, I think some things did come easy, but I do. And I'm not trying to disparage society today. We have enough of that going on. I think that there, and this is part of just the history guy in me, there is a reality to the fact that, and I don't, did we say this last week, that the hymns, I write for some hymn writers.
Yeah.
The hymns that were written in the 18th and 19th century for children
yeah.
to help them learn theology are three times too theologically complex for most adult Christians today. Mm-hmm. Like, there's studies on this that they couldn't understand the theology for children 100 years ago.
Yeah.
That was being taught to them so they would have some foundation. And whether or not those children, the whole point of that was, is whether or not the children had a full understanding of what they're seeing, it was laying a foundation so that when they came into maturity, the terms were there and those things. And I just think we lack sort of a, I mean, I will read, and I've been doing.
You think you need to push in Sadie harder is what you're saying.
Well, I've been doing a lot of research on a pretty big book project that I'm about to pitch.
Yeah.
Like it's one of those like lifetime silver bullet ideas that may or may not take
off. It's a lifetime movie.
And it may or may not.
Small town at Christmas. I get it.
It's one of those stories that, I mean, listener, I hope you feel teased adequately.
Listener
here.
Or viewer.
It's one of those things that it's way bigger story than me. And it's like,
I should hope so, John.
Yeah. Cause this is nothing, but yeah, my life, guys.
That's your sales pitch. First of all, I just want you to know
this is
more than just about me. They're like, yeah, we assume that. Who the heck are you?
Well, I mean, though, most books require a platform.
I know what you mean. It's a more global project.
It doesn't really matter who said what I'm going to say. I'm just happen to be one who's uniquely positioned.
You're a conduit.
Yeah. So it's a bigger story than that. But in researching it, I will read especially like just – I would call them let's think of a term here. I would call them cross-generational peers.
Yeah.
So someone in 1867, uh-huh. 1870, who's going to be socially, economically, in whatever sort of position in society about where I am today, and what they're writing just in their letters to yeah. one another is so much more
right.
verbose, one, uh-huh. but – complex, deep in its thought, like that I look at it and go, okay, I'm a super probably average writer in 2022. I would be in the bottom 20%, and these people are just writing yeah, letters
just
to each
banging
other.
Banging rocks together.
Yeah. Like I'm literally out here just, yeah, exactly, running through the woods, just, you know, trying not to hit trees, and they're like doing uh-huh. things. And
it's a weird way to write.
So
honestly.
I don't know why I can't get a lot
First
done.
Of all, pick up a pen. What are you doing?
And I do. I get a little jealous of it to some extent, but I also go, I mean, no one wants to hear. Listen, here's what I've learned. We talk about it all the time. My go-to move in life, and I've learned this the hard way, and I've had to repent a lot. My go-to move when I feel strongly about something
yeah.
is if you're coming at me with a counter argument that feels uninformed.
Uh-huh.
And I feel that I'm more informed. My go-to move is to make you feel stupid. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a bad go-to move. It's back to that bully the other day. It's a bad go-to move. It never works.
Right.
It does not actually win anybody over.
Sometimes it gets you choked.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because it's a passive-aggressive, angry way to do it.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to be made to feel that they're lesser. Because I think most people are pretty smart. This is not a matter of intelligence. I think for all of us, a humility would be helpful to go, we're probably, and I forget what the name of it is, but there's a bias in the modern, every modern age has a bias to think that they're doing it better than the past generations.
Isn't like, there's one called recency bias, but that's more of like, you're more likely to believe that the most recent thing you heard is true.
Right.
So like if you've just read a book about yeah. wheat belly, everybody in the world is poisoning themselves. Cause you're right. Like, I read wheat belly and this is why.
Yep.
You know, we've got to go. If you've just watched Super Size Me, now all of a sudden it's like, yep. oh, I found the problem of the whole world. And then yep. a month later, you're like, I need a Filet-O-Fish.
Exactly. And that McRib is back.
Yeah.
And so I think, and it may be recency bias, but there is always this feeling that we know more than they do.
Uh-huh.
And I think that.
We talked about that, even with like torture. Like we talked about the whole, like the idea that the people who tortured people in times past, they were monsters.
Right. Well, we do it.
Yeah. When we do it, we have it. Yeah. There's a reason, and we're the good guys. We're always the good guys, the hero of our own story.
And I think it's just, it would do us a lot of good to go, hey, someone in 1855, just because they didn't have an iPhone.
Yeah.
Just because they, you know, were on the cusp of civil war.
Right.
Like, they may have had just as deep or deeper thoughts than I'm having now.
Yeah. I do think there's also another other side of that where we, think that they had it all together. And we don't ever like look at their thoughts with any real critical eye. You know, we're thinking about like the Second Amendment. We're acting like it's like that's a decree from God that can't ever be. It's literally an amendment.
Yeah.
To the, you know what I'm saying? Like this idea that like people who had no idea what guns would end up being, how important they would end up being and how prevalent they would end up being
yeah.
in America, that they wrote something we could never tamper with.
Right.
The idea that could never, that's an interesting way that we've taken that. So we're basically saying like, no, they knew, you know?
It's almost like they were sentient.
Yeah, and the founders were, we've made them to be superheroes. They could have seen the future. They could have seen drive-by shootings. They could have seen school shootings. There's no way that they understand. First of all, it was muskets.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, if we want to go back to muskets, I guarantee there'd be less school shootings.
You're down for it.
You know, if we go back to muskets, I'll probably have one.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a gun guy, but whatever, let's go. Because it's like, you have time to calm down while you load it. You're like, I don't think.
It takes some.
Yeah. You picked the wrong house, buddy.
Yeah, I'll see you in 30 minutes. You know, and now since you just dove straight into this.
Yeah.
But
I just do think it's interesting that there's either a dismissal of
right,
the past.
Or a complete.
Like deification
of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's like, we wrote about that in Not So Black and White. You know, even George Washington talked about the beauty of America is its ability, the beauty of a constitutional republic is its ability to establish and alter its systems of government.
Yeah.
There's an altering. That's why you have amendments. And that they were constantly altering. It's a little bit like the King James Version. I had a talk with someone the other day, and they were talking about King James Version. And I was like, every time I talk about King James Version, I have this book I share.
Right, the 1611.
I have the actual 1611.
Yeah.
I was like, just try to read it.
It's basically unreadable.
It is, because like the F's or S's, or sorry, the S's
the
or F's,
or
the V's or the user V's. And it, I was like, the King
James
like Version.
Code. You need a code breaker.
Even if you're not reading the new King James, just a King James Version uh-huh. today has been altered, they think, at least 1,500 times. English did not exist when Jesus spoke.
Right.
So like there's a, you know.
That's the hard part when you get into somebody talking about literalism, biblical literalism. You're people cannot extrapolate and extricate their belief in the Bible from their belief in their translation of the Bible. Like it's almost like an attack on them to say, well, what you believe is God's word is your interpretation of this. And now you want to die on this hill. You want to fight this battle. But there have been other generations who read this and thought something different. I mean, the Bible was used to defend slavery.
Right. And most of the modern translations are way more accurate because they're dealing with way more primary sources.
Right.
And almost all of them are saying exactly the same things.
Yeah.
I mean, like the translations at this point are vernacular based. They're not content based.
Mm-hmm.
They're dialect. They're nuanced. And even if they're nuanced and they could possibly change the meaning, there's always a footnote of some sort that says, hey, here's what the original manuscripts think or how it's been translated before. So that you get a clearer picture of it.
Yeah.
You know, but back to your point of the Constitution, this gets me into all the areas. And I think this is, let's just, I know we're on two hot buttons now, possibly three, but I think that they all go together. I think it's one big thing that's worth mentioning.
Yeah.
That when there was a dispute over the election, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I had this conversation and it just really ticked people off when I would say this. I'm not trying to, but my first question is do you believe in the Constitution? Well, of course. Yes, of course. Okay, great. Then there's great news. The Constitution and the systems that flow forth from the constitutional structure that we have already created a remedy for a possible disputed election if there was fraud. And it's called the court systems. And so if you really believe in the Constitution, you can sleep at night because at that point, 60 plus courts, some with Trump appointed judges,
right,
have poured through all the evidence that the teams from the states can bring. And I found no fraud that actually affects any outcome. And it was like, again, and I say this is, I'm not speaking about the election outcome right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm speaking about, like, if we say we're constitutionalists, then the founders actually did.
When you don't get your way, you still have to be a constitutionalist.
That's called justice.
Yeah.
Like, that means, like, I really, honestly, in the elections, if the party that I don't want to win wins, constitutionally, that's the outcome I want, even though it's not the outcome I voted for. Like, that's a point where I go, with this, in order for this to work, there has to be a sense of equity and justice that the system works a certain way.
Otherwise, every election is going to be like, I didn't get the result I want. I'm going to take my ball and go home. Like, and we can't have a system like that.
When you're getting into a place where your opinion is dictating your ability to believe truth or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, and this is the key to the turn here. If you would have believed the election results, if they would have gone the way that you liked, what does that say?
Yeah.
It says that there has to be a bias. The election doesn't care what you believe.
Mm-hmm.
If it's truly just counting votes.
Right.
The electoral
college.
Right.
They didn't want recounts in states that Trump won.
You should want a recount nationwide. If you think that the entire system is completely just, fraught with all of this fraudulent issue, then how can you trust the outcome if it was what you wanted?
Mm.
If you're like, well, I wouldn't care then. That's a problem. We should care either way or it's not
justice.
That's
part of that polarization of the social media has done where you surround yourself with people who think like you and you mute everybody else. So people literally were surprised. Like, they just go, well, nobody I know voted for Biden. How could he have gotten 85 million votes? And people who voted for Biden were like, well, clearly he won. Of course
everybody
he won.
Everybody I know. Right.
So it's because we've developed these bubbles.
Right.
We've insulated ourselves.
Both geographically and on social media. Yeah. Like the algorithm
You cannot imagine a person that does not think like you. And so you go, who are these? There's no way there's 85 million of these monsters out there.
Right.
And that's because we've made them, unhuman. And so, it's easy to see why we got where we are. It's just like, what's the way forward? But to your point, that's one example for sure of that.
And I think moving into the gun conversation, and I think I have to preface this a little bit, and I'm glad we're talking about this. We did not talk about it last week, and I think it was a little fresh. I put the little, disclaimer at the beginning of our thoughts and prayers. And you and I even struggle with that. You talked to me about it, and I want to make sure for our listener I'm clear. One, I'm a guy who owns guns. Okay, I'm a guy who actually has a carry permit. Not that in Tennessee you need
John's
that
got a gun
anymore.
Right now, y'all.
Guys, if Johnny knows what's good for him. No, I mean, again, I've taken the gun safety classes. Yeah. I'm not anti-gun in that respect. And statistically, they say 80% of Americans on both sides of the aisle are in support. I know there's a lot of Republicans right now who are speaking out. I heard the governor of Arkansas yesterday. I saw him on the news. We're speaking out for some sort of common sense gun legislation that would at least make it harder. And I know the slippery slope arguments are, and it's an easy question to ask. Would that legislation have stopped any of these latest things that happened? And when we get there, I think we have to recognize that regardless, it's the lawmaker's job to make laws. That's like saying, well, we can't make people put on seatbelts, so we shouldn't pass seatbelt laws.
Right.
Like, we're still going to pass seatbelt laws.
Shouldn't have stop signs because people are just going to run them. If you're a lawbreaker, you're just going to run the stop sign anyway.
And it doesn't mean everyone's – I'm not in support of coming to take away everyone's guns they already have today. I'm not in support. I think that there are some common sense things about assault weapons for civilians. Yeah. I think about waiting periods and all those kinds of things that as a gun owner – and many gun owners I know would be okay with that if it helps to protect people around us. So I want to come out and say, when I said, hey, I think my last statement last week was something like, what I was trying to is not offer a bunch of platitudes, a bunch of, now look, guys, I know it's hard now, but it gets better. People just lost their children.
Right.
I don't know what they're going through.
Grieve with those who grieve.
Yeah, and it wasn't a time either to make a political statement, and I'm not making one now. But I didn't want to also come off as like, all we need is Jesus right now to fix all of this. I think that we need Jesus more than anything. Also, we need to use our common sense and the structures and the systems we have. And if we can make changes and we could not allow our politics to be determined by high-paying lobbies.
Mm.
I mean, did you know that – I heard a statistic this week. After a horrible mass shooting, gun sales go way up.
Right.
Like there's it's not because they're making money and directly off of this. It's that the fear of some sort of restriction is coming. Like we're in a place to go, hey, there's enough happening. If you look even globally, to go, something's different here.
Yeah, we have like 14% of the people and 40% of the guns or something in the world. It's some crazy number like that. Like we have more guns per capita. Like more guns is not the answer. I don't think.
I'm not saying that the humans. And I heard someone post this. This goes back to. If, by the way, if you're a listener and you feel triggered by all these things, I really encourage you to lean in. like lean in for a second. Something we talk about in the book. Well, it's a really good practice to say.
I thought of this, like, we're afraid of being political, or, you know, especially people who we talk about it, like church has gotten so political or whatever. But like, to me, everything is political. Like the fact that we're able to do this podcast and it can go out to people and we're not being stifled, that's political. Like a politician somewhere made that possible.
Yeah.
You know, the fact this water, this water is, it says 100% natural spring water. You can't just say that.
It's FDA approved.
Right. You have like, you know what I'm saying? Like there's liability and legislation that goes into what goes on these labels.
Yeah.
Companies talking about each other in their ads is political because that was protected. Free speech and comedy is protected. Me satirizing another church, like Joel Osteen can't sue me if I do a Joel Osteen impression. That's because a politician somewhere protected that right. So everything we do, electricity is political. Your drinking water is political. So like this idea that like, well, let's not get like it. There's a time when like politics is it's policy.
Right.
And that affects us.
We're so a society of more than one person.
Every
right.
day since the school shooting, there's been another mass shooting. It's not letting up. So it's like at some point, like if you care about people, you have to get into politics. You have to understand politics at least. Even if you go, I choose to abstain from this or I choose to be a neutral party. Like, I don't know if we're there anymore. Like, I think everything's political, so we can't pretend.
I think it's okay to say, too, we're not acting like that. There's going to be legislation that suddenly changes the hearts of people and makes this problem go away.
Correct.
Just like, again, seatbelts or whatever. If we could lessen a few, I mean, I think we have to, you know, the answer here is not, we're not going to legislate morality. We're not going to take those things away. We're not trying to overregulate. But could we be underregulated in places? And there have been times in American history, again, seatbelts is another great example. I didn't wear a seatbelt growing up, did you?
No.
When we were little, no.
No.
People were dying in regular car wrecks all the time. At some point, someone
and
said—
And it got fought against, too. It was like a big pushback.
Yeah.
My civil rights.
And I don't know what the slippery slope has been from that has harmed us to say, hey, I will get a ticket. There's a regulation here because I live in a bigger society than just me.
What's that collectivism versus individualism? We're taught staunch and you know, individualism as an American. And then when we run into a collectivism issue, we default to individualism. And sometimes that gets us in trouble. We saw it with the vaccine. We saw it. We see it with guns. We see because it's always about like, well, what about me?
And it's okay to this sounds awful. Again, I'm telling you, we're a dog in society today. I'm not trying to. It's like someone said the worst thing that Fauci or whomever could have said they said when the pandemic started was wear masks to protect other people.
Yeah.
If they really wanted it to work, you should have said wear masks to protect yourself.
Yeah.
Because that messaging in American society, and I don't think it's because they don't care about people. I think it's because they don't believe the information at some point. You can only believe the stream of information that's coming from your side. So therefore, you can
decide.
Just,
you look and see what letters by the guy's name, and you go, oh, he's a good guy. He's one of us.
It's and like, you believe what he says.
Yeah. It's so weird.
And so, as I say, I saw one of my – an author friend who was talking about the gun control issues being very similar to systemic racism in that if it seems like the pushback is often – we funnel all of gun violence down into individual choices. Mm-hmm. And we don't acknowledge anything systemic. And that's the same thing we talk about in Not So Black and White so much is, you know, finding this balance to go, like, we don't say, guys, it's all systemic.
Yeah.
Of course, there's people who are racist or people who are shooting. And of course, that is the problem. They're the ones, they're the tip of the spear of the problem.
Right.
But to act that there's no spear.
But it's access.
Right. Or act that misinformation. In the Buffalo shooting, the misinformation, I mean, there's lots of research right now about it, about what someone who's mentally ill is believing when they hear it thousands of times from their favorite news pundit,
right.
A theory that is just not true, that is a political theory trying to help garner votes for one side that's destructive. Now, that speech is protected. So it's already political, like you said.
But it's incendiary. It's incendiary speech.
It's being protected. No one's saying not to protect the speech.
Right.
But
you could have lit the fuse for somebody.
You got to protect all the sides of it.
Disinformation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And you're right. It's that weird thing of like what is – and we're obviously proponents of free speech, but it's that thing of like there are consequences to – disinformation. But we just do. It's like the world we have. The world we have, the country that we have is in love with guns. And now we have to figure out a way to move forward now that we have mass shootings every day of our lives. Is there a number that somebody gets to that they change their mind on that if they've already decided for themselves? That's what I don't know.
I don't know. And I don't know how reversible our situation is. I mean, again, I think that's to say we don't know the outcomes.
But I didn't know other countries have figured it out.
Well, other countries have lessened it.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a moment?
So do we, that's another thing. That's the part of American exceptionalism. Do we think we're special in it? But that couldn't be the case here because we have this and this scenario that's different. And there may be different scenarios. Because I understand we're basically 50 different little countries. That's how the United States is. We're not united. There's 50 little countries.
Sure.
You know, and we all could have our separate little, you know.
Well, you could pass a federal law that would over, you know, obviously that's.
And that happened in the Clintons, and that they said it lowered mass shootings. And then it was immediately rolled back by a Republican president, and mass shootings went way up, like 245% that year. So, like, there's a record. I mean, if you care to dig into the data and get past your own stuff, which I've done over the past 4 or 5 years, like, there's data out there to support.
Sure.
Like, if you want to – it's like somebody has to say to you, like, okay, you have this belief. What would it take to change your mind? Like, if I showed you that your belief is wrong, are you married to that belief enough that you would still just – keep going? Like,
it's a huge,
it's almost
question.
Like you make an idol of the belief.
Yeah, it's a huge question. What could possibly be said to you that would allow you to see another side of this? And for me, it's always about a gospel disposition. A gospel disposition is not entrenched. It's not let your, and I love how the Amplified says that, let your reasonableness, let your, I'm using different words here, sorry, but your approachability is kind of the gist of it, which translates into gentleness.
I wish you could be more approachable. I really do.
Oh, no. But let it be evident in all that you do to all. So all counts, your own party, your own church, all counts the opposite party and people that don't believe in God, all counts for your citizens. Like, letting that disposition be evident to all is not being the tone police.
Yeah.
And this idea that somehow that's sissifying Christianity, as if we don't follow a very humble, come to me for I am lowly and humble. I'm gentle and lowly, and you will find rest for your souls.
Yeah, like Christians calling each other sheep the last 3 years when we supposedly are sheep and serve a shepherd. Like, I don't understand why that became a pejorative.
Guys, and I'm sorry, this is a soapbox.
Like, you guys are a bunch of sheep. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a soapbox for me, but I think it's worth saying. That's the funny part. If I was a sheep, I wouldn't. In the way it's being said to me, no chance I say this. So if you could, in theory, I'm proving the point. This whole like we're lions and not sheep movement that's happening. The bumper stickers and it's a big church thing right now. And I just, and maybe I'm wrong here, and I'm no theologian. And apparently, I'm a lion for saying this, or else I would just roll over and say nothing. But that is the most biblically inaccurate thing I think I've ever heard, and I'm hearing it out of pastors.
Yeah.
And I want to say there is no doubt throughout Scripture we're referred to as sheep over and over again, from Israel through the prophets, through Jesus's parables.
Yeah.
Okay? All we like sheep have gone astray, and it's Isaiah. I mean, like, throughout all of it.
Okay? Feed my sheep.
It's everywhere. And Jesus is referred to as a lion, okay, the Lion of Judah, right? I don't know where the Christians or the Hebrews are referred to that, followers or people of faith. And the enemy is referred to as a lion because he roams around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. But I can't find a place where we're supposed to be lions. And then when you show the shirt and all the sheep are wearing a mask and you've tied some extra biblical concept.
Right.
Quite frankly, anti-biblical concept. I can't find a place. Guys, you can send it to me maybe. There may be a reference somewhere that we're referred to metaphorically as lions. I would say, is it in the volume and emphasis across Scripture as a whole to the reference of who we are?
Or are you cherry picking? Because it makes you seem better, makes you seem stronger and better.
And Jesus is not only, by the way, a lion, he's also a lamb, right? So. And metaphors have their limit as well, but the whole point of it is we follow a shepherd, right? Mm-hmm. We are redeemed by a lamb, And that the lion, when he does come, if you want to use the powerful metaphors, it's really not even a battle. Like, he's God. He doesn't really even need to fight. Like, it's already over. Mm-hmm. The sense of, like, we need to rise up as the lions to look like Jesus. Well, the way to look like Jesus, scripturally, is a path to a cross.
Right. Lay down your life.
Yeah, I mean, it's a path to a cross. That's, I mean, it's replete throughout Scripture. It's replete. So, I'm sorry. It may just be a bumper sticker thing, Johnny. I think that matters.
Why do you have that bumper sticker?
I don't know why. Someone stuck it on there and I can't get it off.
Those are hard to get off.
I just can't. I just feel like that at some point.
Man, we really got into it today.
Guys, I'm sorry. I just think at some point.
We opened the can of worms.
If we don't say that, then what are we doing? Like, it's okay. It's okay to go, hey, the disposition of a believer should look like Christ and the disposition of Christ. Unless he was talking, you know, the only time he was harsh. With a bunch of religious people who thought they didn't need it.
I just, you know, the gun stuff is tough for me because I'm just not a gun guy. I don't think guns are evil or whatever. I do think that the proliferation of guns and the politicization of guns, especially when it links to, like, religious fervor, like, it can get really creepy, you know, and it does bother me. But more than that, we're grieving with those who grieve today, and we're not – I think that the inaction that we have seen – from our country has been bought by lobbyists. And I think we're seeing an electorate now that is getting fed up. And so I think we're going to see some action, whether you like it or not, where there's going to need to be something.
And again, if this sounds extremist to you, I think you got to ask the question, with so many Republicans stepping up right now and the letter beside their name is one that you identify with. What makes us what we're saying extreme? At some point, can there not be some reasonable conversation and find a middle ground?
Yeah, like, be reasonable. Like, the people who, for instance, there's a congressman or a senator who stood up the day after the school shooting in Texas, and he said, I'm tired of hearing this argument that it's a mental health issue. He goes, yes, mental health is important, but we are not an outlier in mental health. Other countries have mental health issues too. We're an outlier in guns. Hmm. In other words, what makes us special is the amount of guns that are in this country. And the freedom to just get an AR-15. That's not special. Or that's what's special about us. What's not special is, well, we just got more mental illness. We got to address that. That's the other thing, is the people that go, it's a mental health issue, but don't want to give funding for mental health.
Right.
So it's like, you're just saying stuff to say it now. You're just deflecting.
We might not know you're deflecting.
Yeah.
I mean, again,
I'm saying, like, senators that say that, like, grandstand and go, well, this is clear to mental. Okay, well, what are you doing to address mental health? Well, no, we're not doing that. Look, you're.
Right.
You're,
hey,
if you want health care, go buy it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you, if you're going to say that, then at least go offer, you know, help and not just be, but it's grandstanding. And I think it's grandstanding on both sides, because I think on the far left, you have people who pretend to care for decades and have done nothing too.
Sure.
You know, so I just, you know, it's a weird thing. It's become so entrenched and we're so dug in. And, but yeah, man, I'm not a gun guy, but I understand. I understand that definitely in the early America, I understand the need for guns. But I think as we evolve, we got to go as a people. Like, there's so many of us and there's so many of these shootings. Like, something's got to give. And if there's not a number for you where you could just be like, all right, that's enough is enough. Like, I don't know where the conversation is.
Well, I think that the person who feels that way believes that the gun control won't change it. And I think that's the thing. But by gun control, that's a big, broad thing. I am not advocating.
But I understand
taking away all the current guns.
I understand somebody not willing to try it, not willing to say, hey, maybe you shouldn't be able to get a rocket launcher. Let's try that for 10 years.
Why don't we try something? Why don't we try some regulations in place that limit availability of types of weapons and put some time frames?
Yeah.
I don't think those things are unreasonable. We're not saying. It's like, again, I had an ad come across my feed this morning that said, free speech is under attack.
Uh-huh.
I was like, if free speech was really that under attack, that ad wouldn't have appeared
right.
on my feed. Like, surely, like, I'm not saying free speech is not
something. It's like when somebody says a news story, like, no one's talking about this, and they link to a story where they're talking about it.
It's like,
why is the mainstream media not talking about this? Here's an NBC story talking about it.
Right.
You're like, all right.
On a mainstream media station that we're also, you just go, hey, these things are always debated, and they need to be. I really do believe that there is a need for equilibrium somewhat.
Well, it's like what you said, though, 80% of people pretty much agree that the system we have in place now, where somebody can just turn 18 and then just go get a gun and go shoot up a school, which is what happened in Texas, that's got to give. That's got to change. 80% of Americans agree with you on that. I think it's high 80s.
Yeah.
So there's agreement there. So that means there is a way forward that's not being politicized. That's not, that shouldn't have happened.
Right.
Whether you believe as far as I believe about guns, that I just didn't grow up around guns or whatever, and I just have a different view of gun culture than someone else, that's a whole other thing. You can disagree with me on that. But I'm saying most of us agree that there need to be stricter regulations.
Some sort of middle ground, common sense regulation. Right. Right.
So, not taking somebody's handgun away, not taking somebody's hunting rifle away.
Right.
But the idea that somebody should just go buy a gun that shoots 500 rounds a minute and go to Vegas and just light people up from a hotel room, that should never be able to happen in this country.
Right.
And it does. It happens. It happens on the regular.
It's happening way too much. And we do, man. We grieve with those of you, with our country and those who've lost people. And, you know, back to our original statement, I'm glad we had time to give more context to it. We certainly lean into God. I mean, we need his help and all those things. And we can also use the brains.
One thing, it's the reason we advocate for people is because of that, you know, God gives you empathy. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is not about like demonizing people that are gun owners. It's like, even a gun owner, there's a time when you go, I know I've seen a lot of gun owners come out and be just like you and go, it's time for responsible legislation on guns as a gun owner who enjoys my guns.
Yeah.
It's time to figure out a way to get guns out of the hands of evil people.
Yeah. At least try.
Or people who are just overheated that would calm down if you gave a longer waiting period or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Just there's legislation that's there. And I just think the idea that we just go, well, we'll fix it with just like prayers and we'll pray and God will. It's like we don't do that with any other issue. We don't do that with pro-life issues. We don't go, well, this is a spirit issue and we don't want to get involved. No, right. We try everything we can
to pass legislation
because we believe in it.
Right.
We believe it's a hard issue, but we also believe it's a legislation issue.
Every single thing is both.
Yeah.
In our lives. And when we make one of the other,
right,
then I think we do a disservice to the responsibility we have as people of faith who also live in a human world. So like we got to be okay with both places. So man, what a hilarious episode this was. So much fun was had by all.
I just want to say, John, that I think you're really smart. And I don't want that to put any pressure on you.
No.
You go out there and you take chances, buddy.
I've never been healthier in my life than I am.
Not so much hardworking.
No.
Like, I don't see you working things out or pushing through. But I see you getting by on your wits, and I think it's going to serve you well.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't have the grit, think, that a lot of people have.
No.
You know?
No, this generation, we lack grit. It's like we've been sanded down.
Yeah, I'm like, dude.
We're a smooth people.
Like, I really contemplated yesterday whether to put my energies into eating better or put my energies into buying bigger clothes.
I think I'm going to say eating. Eating better or just
eating? Eating. It's like, you know, buying bigger clothes is not a wrong.
Stretchy pants are out there.
Hey, let me tell you something.
They make sizes up to, you would be amazed.
If I could still touch my toes, those stretchy pants would let me do it.
You know, I gave away my fat clothes when I lost the weight.
So that was to say I'm never going back.
It was. And
you found that guy. I tracked him down and took
him
back.
There used to be a bit about that, about how like when they show like the news stories and it's about the obesity epidemic or whatever news story they decided to make about, you know. And then they just show like a guy, it's cut off and it's just a fat guy walking down the street in a t-shirt and size 52 pants or whatever. And they just show like him from behind. Like, that's a guy.
Right.
Who might see himself on the news that night.
Yeah.
Now he's been identified as the obesity epidemic.
Right.
Like, that's really weird. I wonder if they like find a crew guy and go, hey, you're going to be obesity epidemic guy. Dave, we need you just for this one shot.
I always think about that on the shows where there's like someone on there they're going to make fun of for being ugly or something. Like, when you had to try out for that part.
You had to be cat. And what if you didn't get it? But that would be kind of a good feeling.
Like, hey, you weren't ugly enough.
You weren't ugly enough. Yeah. Or you're distractingly ugly. Like, we need to move the plot along, and this killed the show dead because they're like, I've never seen any. You're like so ugly, it's interesting.
Right. Like,
it's medically fascinating how ugly you are.
Yeah, I don't.
It is weird, though, when they hire because there used to be a bit about that, too, that I remember from when I was a kid, about somebody was like, Band-Aid commercials. Do they hire injured children or rough them up before the commercial?
<You know>? Well, I always wonder if someone
show a kid with a skinned knee, you're like, all right, what's the timeline of this skinned knee?
We need a kid with a skinned knee. Stat. I want to know if there's a listener out there who is a casting director. And I would like to know, if they were to look at us, what kind of roles our appearance, like, I guess we have a, we have, again, an aura about us.
Well, that goes into, how do you see yourself versus how would an audience see you? And sometimes they're different.
Because those casting agents know exactly, like, oh, yeah, you look like you'd be the mobster.
You're the neighbor.
Right. You look like the good guy who's actually the bad guy. You know, there's that guy.
You're the wacky basketball coach.
He's one of those
coach.
Guys who's always like a politician in half the movies, and you think he's the good guy, and he always turns midway behind the scenes.
Then he whispers, and he's like, Hail Hydra. And you're like, he's with Hydra.
Oh, no. Yeah. Like, I want to, do I have that? Could I pull off, like, nice, sinister? You know what I'm saying? Like Justice, the first half of the movie, Sinister, the second half.
Right.
I want to know. So, hey,
I
want
like you start speaking with a Russian accent somewhere, like, he's a spy this whole time.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Interesting. I think you're...
You're like, stick with the podcast audio, right? That's what...
That's if you could... What if we... Don't come in. What about that?
Yeah.
What about auditions are closed?
Hey, so we're not taking any new people right now.
We're going to go ahead and ask you not to come in.
Maybe here's a trash can. Send us your email.
Here, write down my number. 555.
sir, that's... I told you about the day that the guy called me, and he was like, excuse me, sir, you have an unpaid, what was it? I think it was like a school loan or
something. Oh, it was a scam?
And he was like, okay, here's the deal. We've been trying to reach you. And the sheriff has been dispatched.
Oh, wow. He's on his way.
He's going to be there. So, but if you can work with me, then I can try to get this worked out.
Like he's a hostage negotiator.
And he just caught me in the wrong
day. I just need an account number.
He caught me the wrong day, bro.
Yeah.
I was just like,
oh. I promise you, you do not.
I was like, oh, no. Well, that's I don't know how you didn't reach me, man. Let's see if we can get this worked out. And I took the guy on about a 25-minute ride. I just conned him right back.
Yeah.
I was like, so okay, can you tell me your name? I was like, and he did not speak in a contemporary English accent.
I like how diplomatically you're putting this.
But he told me his
to
name was
correct.
Like Tom Smith or something, you know?
Yeah.
So Tom Smith, okay, Tom, what is, I need to know just in case when the sheriff gets here, I can explain everything that I've talked to you. What is your position with the company? And he made up some positions. Like, wait, I need to know, do you have a supervisor? Can I have his name and number and his position? It was like Ed Smith or something. I was like, okay. And can I get, in case we get, because this has happened to me before on these calls, where I don't get to reach you back. I'll never find you in such a big company. So can I have your callback number? Uh-huh. And he was like, 75. And he gave me like
a fake number.
Too many numbers.
Oh.
I go, Tom, those are too many numbers. I think you must have made a mistake. Can you check it again? I was like, it's been 5 minutes. You said the sheriff's going to be here in 5 minutes. Is he delayed? Could you call and find out? I mean, I just kept going and going.
You wasted both of your times.
I did. I was like, I'm done with this. And I don't know if he regretted it.
I can't believe that John Driver had this much. Like, you're so big about not wasting time.
Yeah, I was.
You wasted time out of anger.
I did.
You were like, you took my day. I'm taking your day.
Yeah, it was a real, It wasn't my finest hour.
No.
It wasn't even the top 10. So, but you know what, listener? We hope that we are in your top 10.
We hope you had a fine hour.
We do appreciate you listening every week. And there is lots of other places or other episodes to listen to. Really at one place, though.
At talkaboutthatpodcast.com, where you can find all of our archived episodes, over 200. And you can also go to our Patreon link if you want to kick in a few shekels, help support the show. Look, $5 a month flies out of your pocket. You don't know where it goes.
You don't know where
What's
it goes.
What's that do?
It doesn't.
What's
nothing.
That do for you?
I mean, it does nothing. A lot for us.
That's what I'm saying. But those $5 add up around here, and that's how we make fine quality content for you.
And, you know, here's the thing. We appreciate that $5 champion, but what about that $20 champion?
What's 20, really?
I mean, how if you buy Starbucks.
Do you say
more,
20 or 20?
20.
20.
20.
I wonder if that's a regional, right?
We can ask the casting agent.
20.
I feel like that would get me, hey, yo. I'm going to go get you 20.
20.
I feel like I could be in the mob.
10, 20, 30.
At any rate, you can be that $20 champion as well. It's not called $20 champion. I think it's called the walkie-talkie or the big talker. I can't remember what it is.
But whatever that is.
That's like four Starbucks drinks in a month, Johnny.
I think it's like two now. Starbucks is up there now.
Come on, man.
If you get a venti.
We're not even asking you to skip the Starbucks.
No.
Like you could, we're just trying to
listen to the show while you also have it because we know you're rolling over there.
If you like Starbucks and you're willing to pay that much for that, maybe you should pay that much for this.
Hey,
I mean, how long does it take you to drink that Starbucks drink?
Right, five minutes.
We're giving you an hour. What is that like? 5, 10, 15, 20? How many Starbucks drinks?
We're the garbage, sugary drink of your soul.
We're here, man, to like adjust.
Caffeinate your life.
Oh, my goodness. Straight to the bloodstream.
Uh-huh. And yeah. It's probably a little bad for you.
Yeah. And probably a waste of money. But you could do it anyway. You're already doing it. Why not do it here?
Makes you have to poop.
Oh.
That's the metaphor ended. I'm sorry.
Metaphors have their limit, guys.
They do.
But you know what doesn't?
What?
I don't know. Say the number of episodes.
I don't know. They have a limit too. They're limited to how many we can make.
Hey, let's not put a limit on the number of followers that should follow Johnny on Instagram, though.
That's right. You can follow me. I've been growing this month. I've had a good month.
That's good.
So we had a few videos that got some traction, and that's been cool. So we're building back Instagram. You can find all that from my linktree.com/JohnnyW. Go follow John at his
Linktree.
J-O-N-N-I-E-W. Yeah. Follow John at his linktree.com/JohnDriver. You can find out all about his new book. You can order the book. If you want to get a free book, you can leave a review on Amazon.
All you got to do is email me at johnjohndriver.com.
Yeah, and John will
send you a book. And
that's the kind of people that we are.
Yeah, an honor system out there. If you've got a book and you haven't left a review, please go do that. I love it. Love to see what your thoughts were. An honest review.
You can listen to my special on Dry Bar Comedy. Mm. It's on YouTube as well for free. You can subscribe to Dry Bar and get all access to all of their stuff. And I get royalties when you watch it. So please keep watching. And my new special is coming out very soon, my new Dry Bar. Mm. So brand new content for you guys. We're just making stuff over here.
We are. And exciting news to share, too. There's a lot of things happening with the podcast. So a lot of behind-the-scenes things that we're working
on. We're churning. We're like a duck. Like, you see us floating, but beneath the water, paddling. It is a whir of emotion.
Churn.
It's
so much happening.
Churning.
What if a duck doesn't really, just under air, it's just totally
cold. They're just like, why would I be in your metaphor?
I'm just floating.
It's then you find out that about ship, like when I said you can't turn a ship around.
Yeah, it's like 5 minutes
overnight.
To turn it, yeah.
It takes 5 minutes to turn a ship.
So really, an aircraft carrier.
So really it is pretty quick to turn a ship.
Yeah. So all of you leaders out there were like, you can't turn an aircraft carrier. Yes, you can.
You can.
And all of us are horrible leaders. So. Yeah.
This should have only taken 5 minutes.
Well, guys, thank you for the time you've given us this week, and we can't wait to do it again with you next week on
Talk About That.
Felt conflict between your faith and feelings? If so, you're not alone. My name's Carly Mercouillier. I'm a licensed therapist and the host of the Therapy and Theology podcast, where we explore popular topics and questions related to faith, feelings, and spiritual formation. I want to invite you to join me every Thursday as we fearlessly name the complexities of our reality, grow in the awareness of who we are, and rediscover the power and purpose of our unique stories through the lens of the gospel. Subscribe today at lifeaudio.com.